This podcast was first broadcast on Mix 92.6. Go to mix92.6.com to find more Environment Matters podcasts. And if you enjoy what we do, to find out how you can support the station, which is run entirely by volunteers. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome to Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around Hertfordshire and from further afield. And this week we are going a little bit further afield, not far, just down the train line to the British Library and their most sustainable exhibition ever. It's called Unearthed, The Power of Gardening, and it explores the wonderful power of gardening to feed us, bring us solace and bring us together, as well as a thought-provoking delve into some of the darker history of gardening. I spoke to lead curator Maddie Smith, and I started by asking her why they decided to focus on gardening rather than those beautiful gardens themselves.
So Unearthed, The Power of Gardening is on now at the British Library in London until the 10th of August. And we wanted it to explore the history and the power and the impact that gardening has had over the centuries and how gardening can transform people's lives. And we focused on gardening in particular because it's something that everybody can access and everybody can do, whether or not you're gardening outside, indoors, on an allotment, on a windowsill. And that means that the exhibition has something for everybody to enjoy and everybody could get something out of it. It's also a wonderful opportunity for us to display the National Library's fantastic collections of botanical and horticultural material. We're showing a selection of our gardening-themed medieval manuscripts, for example, some richly illustrated printed books, some paintings, some garden plans and more. And the exhibition is also part of the Library's wider summer programming, which celebrates gardening, celebrates sustainability in the outdoors. There's a full events programme going with the exhibition. And so we wanted to talk about gardening in the round, as it were, rather than focus on historic or grand country estate gardens.
Yes, well, I certainly walked away thinking about gardening in a slightly different way, some different angles that you'd explored, and as you say, using that really rich resource that you've got with some absolutely beautiful and fascinating books. So if we just start with some of the positive aspects of gardening that the exhibition highlights, and you know, one of the first uses for gardening is just to prevent people from starving. And I was really drawn to some of the very early guides that you have to help people grow things. Can you give us some of the examples there?
Yeah, so historically, before food was readily available in supermarkets, growing your own food, fruit and veg, was a really important part of life. And so we really wanted to sort of explore that and acknowledge that. And one particular item that really sort of tells this story is a very early book. It was printed in 1603, so during the lifetime of Shakespeare, to give it some context. And it was written by a gardener from Shrewsbury called Richard Gardner, ironically. And it was called Profitable Instructions for Kitchen Gardens. And he wrote this book to help out his local community at a time when food was really scarce after a series of bad harvests. And it contained a lot of practical advice on how to grow vegetables on small plots. And we included it because it really sort of spoke to that element of food as sustenance and gardening as sustenance. And this sort of spanned all the way through, really. So as late as during World War One, during World War Two, we're all very familiar with the Dig for Victory campaign in World War Two, but land was also turned over for gardening, particularly on allotments during World War One. And we have some lovely paintings and some original World War Two posters in the exhibition telling that story of how women and children, wounded and incapacitated soldiers as well, gardened, and they all grew food to sort of help the war effort.
So as well as food, gardens have in the past provided medicine as well. And you have just one of the best books there. Tell us about that.
So this is one of the treasures of the exhibition and probably of the library as a whole, to be honest. So we are very lucky to have in our medieval manuscript collections the only illustrated Anglo-Saxon herbal to survive. It was produced around the year 1000 to 1025, so it is 1,000 years old. It has lovely evocative illustrations in colour of a variety of plants that people were cultivating for their sort of herbal qualities and also probably sort of picking and foraging from the environment as well. But it includes a surprising variety of plants. cumin, licorice, for example. They probably weren't being grown in gardens in Anglo-Saxon England and probably were sort of known through trade, but it does show the variety of plant knowledge and plant growing that was utilised at the time for medicinal purposes. And we show this in the exhibition alongside a range of other herbals from across the world. We have an Arabic herbal, for example. And we also show it alongside a contemporary collection of herbal remedies donated by a community herbal growing group called Hackney Herbal, based in London. So I think it just shows that even though we have contemporary medicine, there's still a place for herbal remedies and people often rely on them still today.
Now, you have mentioned that some of the books are particularly beautiful, and one that my eye was really drawn to was one, I'm afraid I'm going to pronounce this wrong, the Hortus Istetensis.
It's quite good.
Which is a stunning book. It is big, and we can only see one illustration of a sunflower. It is stunning though, isn't it? Can you tell us a bit about this book and I suppose why it's so lovely?
It is one of the treasures of our printed collections, for sure. So we wanted to showcase all of the wonderful plants that we grow in our gardens and how they come from all sorts of places all around the world. And you can't really tell the story of British gardening without looking at the plants we're growing too, whether or not that's fruit and veg to perennials in our borders or houseplants. And the Hortus Istetensis, it was published in 1613, and it captures on paper what was one of the finest botanical gardens in Europe at the time, the Prince Bishop of Eichstätt's garden in Bavaria in Germany, to be exact. But this garden contained plants from Asia, it contained plants from the Americas, and the Hortus Istetensis was the first book to systematically record every single plant in one garden. And also the detail and the level of accuracy in the illustrations was unprecedented at the time. So it was really a breakthrough moment in terms of botanical illustration and botanical printing. And we're really lucky that the library's copy is hand-coloured. The illustrations are absolutely wonderful. And our copy once belonged to King George III as well. And so it really is one of the treasures of the library, and we're really pleased to have it on display in the exhibition.
It's a stunning book. It is one of them that I did want to reach inside the showcase and turn the pages, because I can really only imagine
so many wonderful
beautiful illustrations.
Yeah, yes. Hard to pick one.
Yes, yeah, amazing. And another thing I suppose that gardening does is it connects us with nature, doesn't it? And I loved one of the aspects that you illustrated in the exhibition, which was the Prisoner's Herbal. Can you tell us about that book, please?
We included it as an example of how people who are incarcerated or in sort of adverse circumstances can still have access to nature and garden in some way, shape or form. When we were researching the exhibition, we sort of came across a bit of a pattern, really, in that gardening in times of hardship has been a very important thing. From the 19th century, people sort of recognised the positive impact that gardening can have on our mood, on our sort of physical health, on our mental health. And so gardens sprung up in soldiers' barracks, they sprung up in psychiatric hospitals, and it's something that is still really important today. Hospital gardens are becoming more and more the thing, and it just shows how important that level of connection and access to nature is for everybody, and how it can be like a rejuvenating force, even when you're in a difficult situation.
So we've talked about some of the positive aspects of gardening that the exhibition shows us, but there are some slightly more problematic issues that definitely made me think. One of the first ones was sexism and having different guides to gardening for men and women. Tell us a little bit about those books.
So women have always played like a really important role in the history of gardening, but that role has been under-acknowledged historically. So women have been responsible for domestic gardening in a big way. So they were the ones that cultivated the herb gardens, and they nurtured the knot gardens back in sort of Tudor times. And maintaining the kitchen garden was a part of domestic life, really. But more than that, women were also employed on those grander estate gardens as well as weeders, ironically for lower pay than the male weeders, even though they were doing exactly the same job. And they also picked fruit in market gardens and things like that too. But as you say, the first printed gardening manual came out in 1564, a most brief and pleasant treatise it was called. But the first gardening manual published specifically for female gardeners wasn't published until much later in the 17th century. And this is the Country Housewife's Garden that was printed in 1617. And I think that sort of discrepancy in terms of women's role in gardening and what men are expected to do, what women are expected to do. Well, that contrast continued right up probably until the 19th century, maybe even the early 20th century. And we have on display as well a Victorian practical guide for female gardeners by Jane Loudon. This was printed in 1840 and it's called Instructions in Gardening for Ladies. And it was one of the first gardening guides to encourage women to be a bit more sort of hands-on in the garden and to get a bit more sort of stuck into like the physical aspects of gardening rather than flower arranging and that sort of side of things. So that discrepancy in gardening has always been there, but it's really important to say that women have always played such a, you know, an instrumental role in gardening across history.
So another slightly problematic aspect of gardening, which I suppose people might be slightly aware of, is plant hunting and its effect on local ecosystems. And you've got some books that demonstrate that beautifully. Can you tell us a little bit about that, please?
So one of the sections in the exhibition is Gardening and Global Exchange. And about 70% of the plants that we grow in our gardens today, they're not native to the UK. And we were really surprised by this. So we thought we'd have a section that explore these plants and sort of find out where they've come from and circumstances in which they arrived here. And many of these plants were introduced at some point, normally between like the 17th and the 19th centuries, when the British Empire was at the height of its power and influence. And plant hunters, they collected plants from across the British Empire and made the most of its sort of trade links and its spheres of influence. And they searched for plants that would be economically valuable, like tea or rubber, for example. But they also searched for the latest and most exciting ornamental plants that would fetch a high price in nurseries and sort of make an impact on the British domestic gardening trade too. But often this type of collecting wasn't done very sustainably. So spurred by manias for particular plants, such as for ferns or for tropical orchids, for example, entire ecosystems were devastated by this really intensive plant hunting activity. We have on display in the exhibition a copy of James Bateman's Orchidaceae, which is one of the biggest and the grandest books about orchids ever produced. It contains some wonderful tropical orchid illustrations. But it has a much darker side. Bateman was a keen gardener, he was a keen orchid grower, and he sponsored directly himself many plant hunters to go and find these plants. And, you know, these plant hunters, especially the orchid hunters, they took thousands of plants at a time, often leaving like none remaining in their local habitats. And so it wasn't a very sustainable way of collecting. And then when the Wardian case was invented in the 1800s, this was an absolute game changer as well in terms of plant collecting and plant introductions back to the UK. So we're really lucky to have on loan from the Royal Botanic Gardens Kew an original Wardian case from the 1800s. And this acted like essentially like a sort of sealed greenhouse. So it maintained a microclimate inside that allowed plants to stay alive even on the longest sort of sea voyages. One of the first voyages that it transported plants on was a voyage from Australia to Britain. And it took about 8 months to make that journey. But because the Wardian case created a sort of sealed microclimate, it didn't need watering, it didn't even need opening, and the plants were still alive when they reached Britain. And this was a game changer. It transported thousands of plants around the world and really accelerated that level of plant hunting.
Indeed, and fantastic to be able to see one of those original Wardian cases, just like a little mini greenhouse that was used to bring us all of those plants from all around the world, things that we still see in our gardens today. Now, you do have on show some really quite horrific books about pest control and what people did about vermin. But you do also have a lovely vision for the future of gardening, showing that we're moving away from that idea that anything wild in our garden is to be exterminated. Can you tell us about your video installation by Alexandra Daisy Ginsberg?
Yes, yeah, so we finished the exhibition with Alexandra Daisy Ginsberg's Pollinator Pathmaker. And this is an installation that celebrates and foregrounds like the pollinator's perspective in our garden. Because as you say, we wanted to make the point that historically we haven't always sort of appreciated the presence of wildlife in our garden or understood the role that they play in our sort of local ecosystems. We have on display a book called The Complete English and French Vermin Killer, printed around 1700. And it identifies so many animals as vermin. Badgers were vermin, ducks were vermin, frogs and worms. And gardeners used so many weird things as pesticides in the past. Whale oil was used, tobacco was used. And then in the Victorian period, gardeners started to use like arsenic and other toxic chemicals. And not only did they have a terrible impact on wildlife, but they also posed a health risk to gardeners themselves, and it contaminated the soil too. And they were later phased out, but they did have an impact at the time. And we wanted to finish the exhibition showing that we were sort of moving away from the detrimental impact on wildlife. And we wanted to showcase the fact that our gardens are not only for us, they're also for the wildlife and the ecosystems that they contain.
Indeed. Now, you have made sure that the exhibition itself, you've done this all sustainably. Can you just briefly tell us how you've done that and how you've done things differently?
Yeah, so Unearthed is the library's most sustainable exhibition to date, actually, and we're really pleased about that. And we've done this in a number of ways. So we work closely with our external designers, and we've used a lot of bio-based materials such as timber panels, water-based paints, and a lot of cork. And I think that's a carbon neutral material in itself. So we were really pleased that that works so well. We've specifically made an effort to make sure that the materials used in the exhibition design can be reused and they can be recycled. They can be taken down easily as well. And we've tried to minimise our carbon imprint by sourcing the majority of our loan objects as locally as possible. And we've reused frames, we've reused display cases, and we've reused as many of the book cradles as we can from previous exhibitions. And what's also really nice is that we've been working with one of our community gardening partners, Global Generation, who have got the Story Garden behind the British Library. And we've been working with them to replant the Poet's Circle on the British Library Piazza. And they've transformed what was like a horrible space filled with box blight affected box plants into a really sort of pollinator friendly wildflower meadow. So we're really pleased to have that sort of level of sustainable thinking sort of both inside the exhibition but also outside the British Library as well.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed the exhibition. Congratulations. Hope that many more people do. Maddie, thank you so much for telling us about that today.
Oh, no problem. Thank you very much.
I was talking there to lead curator Maddie Smith, and Unearthed, The Power of Gardening is on until the 10th of August at the British Library. Do give yourself a couple of hours to look round, and probably one that the kids won't appreciate so much. I'll be back with you at the same time next week when we'll hear about the Hertfordshire Bird Club, especially for young people. Until then, thank you for listening.